Are you ready for the Great Conjunction? Oh yeah, it's coming. You know it is, right? We are going to celebrate, us Urantia readers. We know the truth. We know what's happening. We know that when Saturn and Jupiter get together in the nighttime sky, great things happen, right? As they have, we know we have the inside scoop, don't we? It's right there in the Urantia Revelation. It talks about when Jesus was born that year, there were three great conjunctions, and that later got interwoven into the legend of the Star of Bethlehem. So I'll be watching with keen interest this time up when this event occurs. And if you're hearing this and it's already passed, the Great Conjunction, if you didn't hear about it, was just this last solstice and lasted through up until December 24th. So it's good to have you, and we're going to cover some real cool stuff. I have three different segments from the first chapter of the Urantia book in the first section. It's been on my mind, and I haven't really spent a lot of time on this in a while, but I've always been concerned about the diminishing impact that God is having in our life, in our society. And I read a great article not long ago about how the English education system has slowly eradicated religion from culture. So what secular religion has done, through no fault of their own — I'm not altogether conspiratorial, thinking there was some grand master plan by, you know, the devil or something — but it's just because even when we read about the government on a neighboring planet, for those who follow the Urantia book and know what I'm referring to, it's the paper right after or right before the Adam and Eve section. And it talks about a country that's not dissimilar from our own. And they, too, admit that religion is really something that should be taught in the home. And it comes from parents who are religious. That's where you're going to get the best religious instruction. You can't depend on teachers unless they're specifically teaching. I mean, I wish we had a better curriculum when it comes to history and the importance of religion and the benefits of religion throughout humanity. And in some schools, they probably teach it, certainly in Christian schools. But by and large, our educational system has lost, or maybe never had, the intention of being a place where you would learn about God. And so God doesn't get as much press anymore. And in certain countries, you're not even allowed to believe in God, which is strange to me. So I thought it would be helpful to focus on two things that are quick reads and that will really exemplify three things. One, how incredibly well-written this Urantia book is. Two, by choosing these two passages, I'm going to reveal to you so much information, it will literally, if you're new to this, it'll blow you away. Because the revelators take what we know already and expound on it. And it's amazing to me, every time, and I've read this particular paper, it's paper one, chapter one, and it's about the Father's name. And it talks, because I was thinking the other day, you know, where does the word God come from? I don't even know where the word God comes from. Does anybody know where the word God comes from? Where does it find its derivation, etymologically speaking? What is the root? Good? You know, so I thought to myself, well, why do we call God God? What does it mean, right? And then I was reminded that very eloquently the Urantia papers go into this very subject. In fact, it's the first thing they talk about in the Urantia Revelation. So if you want to follow along with me, it's paper 1, section 1. And then we're going to jump to another paper, paper 1, section 3. And I found one specific paragraph that perfectly explains the process of resurrection. And I'll get to that in just a moment. But let me read through this because it's a great read. And I just feel like there's probably people who would love to hear this, even if you're a Urantia book reader or you're just looking for some spiritual guidance. This is what I think distinguishes the Urantia book from any other book. And mark my words, when you hear this, if it doesn't ring true. Okay, so we'll get started. The Father's name. Of all the names by which God the Father is known throughout the universe as those which designate him as the first source and the universe center are most often encountered. The first Father is known by various names in different universes and in different sectors of the same universe. That's a revelation. For the first time, we're being told that God is worshipped all over the place. The names which the creature assigns to the Creator are as much dependent on the creature's concept of the Creator. The first source and universe center has never revealed himself by name, only by nature. If we believe that we are the children of the Creator, it is only natural we should eventually call him Father. But this is the name of our choosing, and it grows out of the recognition of our personal relationship with the first source and center. The Universal Father never imposes any form of arbitrary recognition, formal worship, or slavish service upon the intelligent will creatures of the universes. The evolutionary inhabitants of the worlds of time and space must of themselves, in their own hearts, recognize love and voluntarily worship him. The Creator refuses to coerce or compel the submission of the spiritual free wills of his material creatures. The affectionate dedication of the human will to doing of the Father's will is man's choicest gift to God. In fact, such a consecration of creature will constitutes man's only possible gift of true value to the Paradise Father. In God, man lives, moves, and has his being. There is nothing which man can give to God except this choosing to abide by the Father's will. And such decisions, affected by the intelligent will creatures of the universes, constitutes the reality of that true worship which is so satisfying to the love-dominated nature of the Creator Father. When you have once become truly God-conscious, after you really discover the majestic Creator and begin to experience the realization of the indwelling presence of the Divine Controller, then, in accordance with your enlightenment and in accordance with the manner and method by which the divine sons reveal God, you will find a name for the Universal Father which will be adequately expressive of your concept of the first great source and center. And so, on different worlds, in various universes, the Creator becomes known by numerous appellations. In spirit or relationship, all meaning the same, but in words and symbols, each name standing for the degree, the depth of his enthronement in the hearts of his creatures of any given realm. And so, think about what you've just been told. You've been told that, number one, God is universally worshipped by enlightened beings everywhere, that God doesn't coerce us, he doesn't compel us, he simply wants us to give, and the best way that we can give is to be like him. Just serve other people. Do your best. That's what he wants. He just wants you to do your best, knowing that he's in that partnership with you. I think that's pretty cool. And, you know, it's so hard to find words to express my appreciation for the revelation, but it's not anything that wouldn't be as inspiring if they were coming off the words of the Bible or some other religious book. God can be found everywhere if you're looking with the spiritual eye. What is it, that one statement that Jesus says in paper 155? To a man who has God in his heart, all things are spiritual. And so now I want to talk about this, because for a long time I've talked to a lot of people who just can't buy the whole religious thing. You know, they just, to them, this is it, this is where we are, and there is nowhere else, and so just get over it. The only thing that persists is our legacy. That's the common atheist look, or a person who has no interest in deity or theism, which atheism is just, I don't even think of it as true. That's what an atheist, why are we having this discussion about God? Pfft, you know, what are you talking about? So it's always been challenging for me if I could just find that one paragraph that explains the process of what the resurrection is, the persistence of the spirit of man as it continues. Because if you believe in God, you believe in the afterlife. You believe in a continuance. You believe in eternity. You believe that this isn't all there is. And so here is this, and it's from paper one. Again, we were just reading on that. And by the way, paper one is probably the best place to start in the Urantia book. Not the foreword, but paper one. And then from there, you can, after you read the first five pages, then you can jump around and enjoy the Urantia adventure. But here we go, from paper one, section four. This is talking about the inner experience of man and how we go from being mere mortal men to spiritual beings. So it reads, in the inner experience of man, mind is joined to matter. Such material-linked minds cannot survive mortal death. The technique of survival is embraced in those adjustments of the human will and those transformations in the mortal mind whereby such a God-conscious intellect gradually becomes spirit-taught and eventually spirit-led. This evolution of the human mind from matter association to spirit union results in the transmutation of the potentially spirit phase of the mortal mind into the Urantia realities of the immortal soul. Mortal mind, subservient to matter, is destined to become increasingly material and consequently to suffer eventual personality extinction. Mind yielded to spirit is destined to become increasingly spiritual and ultimately to achieve oneness with the surviving and guiding divine spirit, and in this way to attain survival and eternity of personality existence. So we're hitching a ride. Remember that song, Hitching a Ride? We're actually hitching a ride on the spirit that's in us from God. That's the father fragment, the thought adjuster, the mystery monitor. It's that peace of God. And interestingly enough, even though we are the lowest in the food chain of the spiritual universe in terms of will creatures, of spirit potential, we're the lowest on the rung. We're the last. We have the greatest distance to traverse from going from here as we are now to the eventual embrace of the Paradise Father. And we're the only ones that have these fragments in us. That's the most, you know, the highest sons, Melchizedek's don't even have that fragment. Now, of course, they have a much more enlightened spiritual perspective, but they don't have that fragment of the Father in them. We do. And that's how we get from here to there. And we do this by willful action. It just doesn't happen automatically. You have to want it to happen. You have to stick your thumb out and get a ride. You can't just walk along the highway of life and have somebody just pick you up. You got to tell God, I want to go on that road. I want to go on that trip. And we do that through our actions. And that's what they're saying is, of course, the material mind is going to disintegrate. Of course, to the atheist, yeah, this is the here and now. Once this body's ended, there's nothing else except that you have within you a spirit from God. You have a father fragment. You have a small speckle of deity that's actually in your mind, not in your physical brain, but in your consciousness, which is itself a supermaterial reality. Consciousness is not something you can touch. It has no weight. It is not composed of physical matter, and yet it exists. Otherwise, you and I would not be able to understand each other. And so with that, I'm going to read the final, and this is going to get you. So this is, again, from the Big Blue Book, final paragraph, where the author of this particular paper says, I come forth from the eternal, and I have repeatedly returned to the presence of the Universal Father. I know the actuality and personality of the first source and center, the eternal and universal Father. I know that while the great God is absolute, eternal, and infinite, he is also good, divine, and gracious. I know the truth of the great declarations God is spirit and God is love, and these two attributes are the most completely revealed to the universe in the eternal Son. And that comes from the Urantia book. And again, it's just a marvelous, marvelous idea that these revelators are able to communicate such wonderful insight to guide us along. And there you have it, this time up, just some time with God and the process of surviving material death. What is that process? And that's what we've been talking about here. So I want to put out a clarion call just for those who like to write on the urantraradio.net website. If you are a writer, or if you'd like to contribute an essay, or if you would like to comment, please reach out to me at urantrabookradio@gmail.com, urantrabookradio@gmail.com, submitting articles, and we'd love to hear from you. Until next time, thanks again for joining me this time up, and Merry Christmas, Happy New Year. God bless. I'm Jim Watkins from Urantra Radio, the podcast.